Marriage matters to God, and marriage matters to her, and marriage matters to him. And like I did last week, I want to start off this message today with some good news about marriage. We get bombarded quite a bit with bad news about marriage, that the divorce rate is so high and that nobody's happy in marriage. And so I wanted to share a few of these things with you today. Shanti Feldin, in her book, again, The Good News About Marriage, says this: around 80% of marriages are happy marriages. 34% are highly happy, meaning both the husband and the wife anonymously, separate, filled out a survey, and both of them said, yes, we're doing great. We're both happy in this marriage. 37% are happy. One spouse or the other said, oh, yes, things are great. And the other spouse said, sometimes, most of the time, things are great. And finally, 29% are so-so and struggling. And even amongst those couples, the husband or the wife said, sometimes things are pretty good, sometimes things are well. And so oftentimes we get told that nobody's happy in marriage. That's just not quite true. The second thing she said was, most people are glad they married their spouse. 95% of people, when asked, said, yes, I'm glad I married my spouse, and I would do so again if I had the chance. And finally, most of those who aren't happy will be if they will stay committed to each other for 5 years. Sometimes people will enter into marriage and the first few years are a little bit difficult. And this can actually get a little close to home. I have some family that had this viewpoint. He kind of came from a difficult past. And he said, well, once we've made it 5 years, then we'll know we're going to make it. You know. But this idea of most people who aren't happy will be if they'll stick it out, if they'll stay committed to each other for 5 years. I mentioned a disclaimer last week, and I want to mention it again today. Marriage is tough. You've got to be intentional about working on your marriage. It's not going to just be easy, and it's not just going to get better on its own. It takes intentionality. So as we talk about marriage, sometimes that can bring to the surface things that you've not talked about for a while. And so, in fact, sometimes marriage can get a little bit more difficult before it gets better as you start talking about it. The evil one would like nothing more than for you to bury that and just forget about it and not pay any attention to it. Don't do that. Bring the problems into the light. Get help. We would love to encourage you and point you in the right direction and let God do his work. So we are in week 2 of a series called Marriage Matters. And we're talking about struggles in marriage. We want to give you skills, knowledge, tools, resources to help you have a happier, healthier marriage in 2019. I do believe that this series can be transformative for all of us. It doesn't matter if you are single, if you are dating, if you are engaged, if you've been married for 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. I do believe there's something in here for each and every one of us. We all need a little bit of help. God has designed men and women differently. Differently so much so that it's almost comical. And we began to dive into this concept last week, just starting with this idea. Most marriage matters are because men and women are different. Matters meaning conflict and tension and problems. Most of that happens because men and women are different. We just are. And I kind of played out a few of those ideas of the expectations, the differences, how we walk into marriage with these different ideas. And there's a growing gap in these expectations because of how we're designed. And I did, I'm going to throw it out again this week. I joked last week that around the topic of intimacy, sometimes a man will enter into marriage and he thought the calendar was going to be something like this. And a woman might enter into a marriage, and maybe, perhaps, she envisioned the calendar looking more along the lines of this. And my wife pointed out to me, she said, it would have been even better had you had her day fall on the day that he had off. Either way, oftentimes we enter into marriage with different expectations about different things. Now, someone walked up to me after the message last week and asked a very insightful question. I thought I'd share it with you today. She said, What are there differences? What are the difference between expectations and needs, desires and wants? And I said, I believe there are. And I don't know if I can fully explain that for you this morning, but I believe there are very clear and evident needs for a woman. I believe there are very clear and evident needs for men. So that's probably what I'm going to focus on today and tomorrow most of all. There are expectations that we bring into a relationship, and it could be based on our upbringing or maybe a previous relationship or a lack of a previous relationship. We can walk into a relationship with expectations. And then, of course, there are desires and there are wants, and maybe those are somewhat unique to individuals. And I'll even go as far as to say, if we're not careful, sometimes those can be a little bit selfish. So I'm trying to create a little bit of humor around this idea of expectations that we bring into a relationship, into a marriage. And I'm going to teach more specifically on the needs that men have, that women have. Probably going to stay away from desires and wants for now. If that sounds a little bit needy, then so be it. But again, I said this last week, your spouse's perception is your reality. So your spouse's perception of your relationship, of you, that is what you are living in. It is your reality. You need to be mindful of that. And we laughed a little bit last week talking about these differences in expectations. But the point I wanted to make very clear is no matter how long you've been married, wherever you're at, we're all different. There's a gap between us. There's a gap that happens in every single relationship. So the question isn't whether or not you're going to have a gap or differences in things. The question isn't necessarily even when that will become apparent. The question is, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to actively do about the gap, the differences in your relationship? Now, last week I mentioned there are several bad decisions that people choose when they recognize there's a gap in their relationship. Some people will choose to leave. Some people choose to give in. Sometimes couples choose to compromise. Other times one person chooses to try and control the other. And we said that the only good answer, the only good answer that God gives us through His Word for us to have a thriving marriage, the most powerful principle in marriage is this idea of mutual submission. We started with Ephesians 5:21, and Paul begins with this verse. A lot of times we skip right over it, but this is the dominant thought of this section of Scripture. In 5:21, Paul says this, "Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ, not because they deserve it, not because you want to, not because you're having a good day or they're having a good day, but out of reverence for Christ, out of respect for Christ, out of fear for Christ." We talked about the definition of submission. That is when I decide, even when they don't deserve it, to put their needs before my own. And that is tough. It's difficult. But that is what God asks us. It is what God commands us to do in marriage. Submission is not a negative word. It doesn't have to be. Now, I left you with some homework last week to have practice as a couple with mutual submission, to get into the expectations box of your spouse and ask them, what is one thing I can do to serve you more? And I know some of you did that this last week, and some of you maybe didn't do that this last week. For those of you who did, for many of you, maybe it was quite difficult, and here's why. Naturally, men view the world, they view their spouse, they view their relationship through everything, in fact, through a very specific set of lenses. Men do. All men have them. Women have their own set of lenses that they look at their relationship and at the world through their lenses. And what happens is men begin to peer into the woman's box of expectations and through their lenses, and they're thinking, well, that's kind of strange. I don't really understand that. And women do the same thing. Maybe they put on their lenses and they look into a man's box of expectations, and it's like, he's a little broken, but I can fix that. I can work with that. That's what happens. We do that. Each of us look at one another and the expectations we have through our own set of lenses. But God has designed us differently. We need to understand that. But here's the problem. The culture we live in, you know this by now, the culture that we live in, we are being told now more than ever that there really are no differences between men and women. My opinion, that's one of the most dangerous attacks on marriage today. Did you know scientifically that almost every cell in a man's body has a different chromosome makeup than almost every cell in a woman's body? Almost every cell is different. That does not mean, it doesn't mean that we don't have some similarities. But make no mistake, God designed us very differently, and He did so on purpose. But here's the problem. When you walk into your relationship or your marriage, how much training did you have prior to? Most of us, perhaps not very much training at all. Maybe you're aware of this, but it takes a few years for an electrician to get their license. It takes a few years for a plumber to get their license. Do you know how much training it takes to get a marriage license? None. Zero. It takes two willing people and $30 for the license fee. And in the state of Colorado, a couple can even solemnize their own marriage. So we're going to be dealing with some difficulties in marriage when it comes to differences. And if you want to have a thriving marriage, you'd better start understanding these differences at a deeper level in your relationship. So that's what I want to talk about today and next week. Marriage matters to her today. Marriage matters to him next week. So we're going to look at the top five needs of a man next week. Today we're going to look at the top five needs of a woman. These come from research based and written about in a book by Willard Harley called His Needs, Her Needs. It's a great book. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. He breaks down 10 needs and he talks about five for him and five for her. Now, I'll warn you ahead of time, the subtitle of the book is How to Build an Affair-Proof Marriage. And every single chapter will give you a real life story of a couple who has had an affair, largely in part because a need was not met. That's how serious it can be. So that can be a little disheartening to read that, but still, it's a great book. Now, when he's talking about these 10 needs, five needs for him and five needs for her, can you guess how many of those line up identical? Zero. None of them do. Now, there are some similarities. There are some balancing needs. But God has created us very differently. So we've got some work to do to dive in and understand one another. So today, ladies first. And I'm going to try to articulate for all of us a woman's top five needs. And I'm clearly wading into some dangerous water here. I get that. I've never been a woman. But I live with three females, my wife and our two daughters, and so I'm going to do my best. And ladies, if I say something that is insensitive or is not how you would exactly articulate it, I ask if you would show me a little bit of grace. And I'll let you know, my wife is going to join me on stage a little bit later on in the message. She can correct anything that I've said in error. I do want to begin with a verse, and I want to anchor to it, and I want to ask you to hold fast to it, men. It's from 1 Peter 3. During our time today, hold fast to this verse. Peter dives into marriage and the concept of mutual submission, and he talks to women about mutual submission, and then he talks to men. And this is what he says in verse 7. You husbands must give honor to your wives. That word honor means to put them in esteem, to put their needs above our own. Before our own. That's the model. And then he goes on to give a very practical way to do that. The second part of the verse. Treat your wife with understanding as you live together. Treat her with understanding. That word understanding in the Greek, it's actually quite deep. It talks about discovering, to learn, to seek out, to figure out. And so men, we are told that if you want to make it work in marriage, you had better discover and learn and try to understand your wife as you live with her. So as we walk through these top five needs, men, please realize I'm not giving these to you. I'm not making you aware of these to beat you up. I'm not bringing this to your attention to beat you down. I'm trying to give you some tools and some resources. I'm trying to put a sword in your hand and a shield in your hand so that you can go to battle for your wife, so that you can be her hero, so that you can run towards the battle line. And ladies, I would just ask today that you would keep the elbows to a minimum, because you're going to be tempted to poke a bit. Ladies, I know that as we walk through these top five needs of a woman, not every single one of them is going to resonate with you. But I do believe that one or two, maybe even more, will connect very directly with your context or how you feel about things. We're going to start with number five. We're going to work our way back to number one. The number five need of a woman is family commitment. Family commitment. Now, this is not to say that men don't care about family. It just means that in general, women oftentimes have a greater desire for there to be family commitment from their husband. An example would be, and I've heard this, I've read this. I've even been told this from a woman in when I've done some counseling with married couples before. And it'll be something like this. At some point, she will say, well, when I really fell in love with him was when I saw how he treated his family, especially his mom. Why is that? Well, she is projecting forward. She is observing how he interacts with his family, and she's projecting forward. Is he going to be a good family man? Is he going to be a good dad? How is he going to treat me? And men, we can get confused by this, and we can think, well, hey, I'm out there working hard, and I'm providing, and maybe I'm working all the time. I'm not mistreating you or the kids, but men, we need to understand that for her, oftentimes, how you treat the kids and how good of a dad you are, maybe even how you treat some of her extended family, is very linked, directly linked to how she feels and how she feels love from you. We've got to understand that. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, Paul writes this, "Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Don't exasperate them." He continues on, "Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord." I'm going to try to summarize each of these ideas for you this morning, and this is how I've put it in your notes. She sees a great husband as a good dad. She sees a great husband as a good dad. They're linked more than we want to admit it. And so if there are any single guys in the room and you want to win the heart of that woman that you're dating out there or have your eye on, I would just encourage you, treat her family well. Treat your family well. Need number four is financial stability. Financial stability. And sometimes there are men who want to push back on that and say, well, wait a minute, are you suggesting that it's just all about the money? That she's just seeking a man who has money? That it's just, she's just out for money? Is that what you're saying? That's not the point. The key word is stability. She needs stability, which is different than wealth. Most women are not looking for great amounts of wealth or to be rich. They want stability, financial stability. Now think with me on this, and I know that this, it's a little risky to kind of bring this up, but I think it's fairly a common idea. How often do we hear about a 20-something-year-old woman marrying a much, 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 much older man who has great wealth? And because he has great wealth, we hear those stories and we even kind of make jokes about those stories. But I would argue on the flip side, it's much less frequent, if at all, that we hear the same story of a 20-something-year-old man marrying a much, 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 much older woman for her money. Why is that? Well, I believe inherently women have a need for some financial stability a little more than men do. Again, the key word is not riches and wealth. It's stability. In fact, I've even heard women say something to the effect of, I would even be okay with a little bit lower standard of living if it meant that we had more financial stability. It's about stability and minimizing that concern and that worry. Again, that sounds strange to a lot of men, but it's a big deal to women. Need number three, honesty and openness. She needs you to be honest and open with her. This is different from trust. Now, the two are very much directly linked, but trust is a big thing for both men and women. The way that I would articulate this specifically is oftentimes when a man enters into a relationship, it's difficult for him to give up his independence, especially if he's entered this relationship or this marriage later on in life. We don't like giving up our independence. And so at some point, when she begins to ask questions like, where are you at? Or where are you going to be? Or when are you going to be home? Or what did you do today? Or what happened on the business trip? Well, that feels a little intrusive to us men who like our independence. And if we're not careful, when those questions come, nobody asked these questions of me before, why are you asking me now? And so if we're not careful and those questions begin to come, we can answer with one word responses. How long before you're going to be home? Or when are you going to be home? Sometime. Hey, what happened on the business trip? Nothing. Well, and then if there is something that maybe is going to make her a little bit uncomfortable, there's really nothing in our mind, but maybe if we're hanging out with a group of guys that she doesn't really approve of, or if there's someone at the office, there's really nothing there, but she has some concerns. If we're not very intentional about it, we can begin to, in a protective fashion, keep that information from her. Well, I don't want to make a big deal out of it. I don't want to worry. We are less than open. We are less than honest about the situation. But when the truth comes out, and it always does, if there's something that's been hidden, it can be devastating for a woman. She wants your transparency. She wants you to be honest and open with her. It's a need that she has. Much more on this topic to discuss, but I would summarize it this way. Secrecy is the enemy of intimacy. Secrecy is the enemy of intimacy. Proverbs 24, verse 26 says this, just for fun today, an honest answer is like a kiss on the lips. So what would a dishonest answer be? I don't think we want to go down that path. Men, what you need to know is that for a woman, honesty leads to intimacy, that closeness. So you have to be aware of this and understand that's just how she's wired. Need number two for a woman is conversation. Almost every study ever done will show the results that women tend to speak 7,000 to 12,000 words a day more than men. There's an old Chinese proverb that says this, the tongue is the sword of a woman, and she never lets it become rusty. And some of you men might be thinking, yes, it is. No, she doesn't. What we have to know is that she is going to want to communicate with you, have conversation with you, probably more than you are going to want to. But the issue is not just the frequency or how often she wants to communicate with you, it's how we communicate with her. And so I would summarize it this way. She needs regular, two-way communication in the right tone. And I'll talk about tone just a little bit later. I think this is a great time to invite to the stage a female voice on this topic of a woman's needs. So I had to convince her to do this, especially after my humor last week. But would you help me welcome my wife to the stage? We have been married for almost 19 years. This May will be 19 years, and so I think we've figured out a few things, and maybe not a few. Maybe there's a few things I probably haven't figured out, though, as well. So we are talking about the top needs of a woman in a relationship, and you're here. You know that we've been talking about family commitment and financial stability and honesty and openness. And I would just ask if you would start by weighing in on this idea, the need of conversation for a woman.
Well, it is a big need. We do like to talk, and it hasn't always been easy. Specifically thinking about in the early years of our marriage, sometimes something would happen, and I want to talk to Seth about it, and he would immediately want to fix the problem. And this still goes on if you have a husband. They want to fix the problem. So sometimes I just want him to listen and hear me and not interrupt. So that's been a struggle. And then also in the early years, maybe there'd be a conflict and he would want to fix it, right? He'd want to talk about it immediately. And I'd be like, whoa, I need to think about this. I don't want to immediately talk. I need some quiet to get my thoughts together to make sure I don't say something mean. And some people are opposite. The girl wants to really talk about it, and the guy doesn't. But we're kind of opposite in that way, because you're a fixer, which is good. And then when our kids were younger, and so many of you have young kids, so this is just really hard. When do you even get time to talk? So we had to really be intentional about when we'd even have conversation, or we could. And I think in the recent years, the biggest issue has been distractions in the form of a friend he carries with him everywhere that I just want to chuck sometimes. You know, the little ding, ding, ding when you're trying to have those conversations. So the phone can really be a hindrance to good conversation. But overall, I don't I mean, I don't think we've struggled a ton. We communicate a lot.
So how does conversation meet your needs as a woman in our relationship? How does conversation meet your needs?
When Seth and I converse, it tells me what's going on in his life and what's going on in our life. We can share that so that we can be on the same page. It lets me know what's important to him, and then I, in turn, get to share what's important to me. It gives me a good direction of where we're headed as a family and some of the goals that we have. And then I also am aware of the struggles that Seth is going through, some of his dreams and plans that he has, and so that helps me be aware of what's going on in his mind and vice versa. So I think conversation really brings us close, and it's one of the ways that I bond with Seth. It's one of the ways that I can feel really close to him through talking.
So what has worked for us over the years to be intentional to have better conversation?
Well, again, for you younger families, we had to be so intentional. So sometimes it's just survival during those years, and being able to even see you and talk to you is important. So we had a very strict bedtime of 7:30. That did not mean the kids were asleep. It just meant they were in their rooms away from us so that we could have a little bit of alone time. So very strict, very intentional, and it can be done because we did it a lot. And then at some point, they grow up a little bit, and you can maybe leave and take some errands. So I remember the first couple times that happened, it was amazing to be alone in the car and no kids and no babysitter. And so conversation in the car, and we just, like, run to Lowe's. And if he opened the door, it became a date. So there was that, too. And I always think if you go to Lowe's, then you're dreaming about the future. So that's a good thing, too, right? So when I have mornings free, while the kids were at school, we'd go get breakfast, or we'd just stay home and have breakfast, and that was a good time to get on the same page. And now it's weekends, mornings, on the weekends or in the evenings. The kids are older, so we can take off a lot. And then I would say, if you know us, you know that we banter back and forth, and so we are pretty good at not taking ourselves too seriously, so that when we do need to have those harder conversations, it's not like every time we talk, it's serious. So we can have those serious conversations. And then we've even come up with some tips that might help you this week for
this,
you guys.
Yeah, we've been talking about this morning and how this was going to play out. And we were actually in the hot tub and we were kind of joking about...
Oh yeah, the hot tub is a great place for good conversation.
Yeah.
Conversation. Anyways.
And so we were talking in the hot tub a few days ago, and Dennis said something to the effect of, how do I know that you're listening to me? And I don't know, something to that effect. I don't remember if she did it first or I did, but I was like, well, I've got my listening ears on. And so...
Listening.
Yes, so that probably won't work for most of you, but...
It made us laugh.
We do. We banter back and forth. I would give you men some tips. It does not have to be long, long, long-winded conversation. It does need to be regular conversation. If you're on a date, leave your phone in the car. Don't take it into the restaurant or wherever you're at. If you're in the house, find another place in the house to put your phone. It's great for convenience, but it's horrible for conversation. I don't have this mastered. These are just tips, and you know, a lot of times I talk to myself and let you listen in. Just listen. Don't always have to fix whatever it is that your wife needs to talk to you about or wants to talk with you about. And to the best of your ability, get the kids somewhere else. The kids don't need to be there. They don't need to be distracting things. So I asked Dana about this next topic a few days ago just to check in on some things. She told me that I don't necessarily struggle in this area, but I know that a lot of men may think that they're doing good and they're trying to create communication and conversation with their wife, but a lot of men are not always wise about being careful with the words that you choose or the tone of voice that you use or the body language that you posture. And if you're not careful, your body language, your words, your tone can cause your wife to shut down. And so if you have no idea what I'm talking about, oh, I never do that, then maybe you just simply ask her about it. Again, we're men, and so sometimes amongst men, we can talk pretty direct, or we can be even a little bit harsh. That is not how God created your wife. She is much more delicate and sensitive, and that's not a bad thing. That's how God has designed her, and it brings great strength to your family. So I would give you maybe a summary thought at this point, and it's simply this. You're never persuasive when you're abrasive. That's true in marriage. I know that. Colossians 3, verse 19, Paul says, "Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them." Love your wife and do not be harsh with her. Do you understand why that command is given to men? She, your wife, is more delicate, and you have to watch how you have a conversation with her. The number one need of a woman, I left it blank on your sheet. Can you guess what it is? Affection. Affection. Now, this can be confusing for us guys, because a lot of time, most of the time, we are going to often view affection and intimacy and sex as the same thing. And Dana, I'm guessing that most women do not.
No. No, and don't get me wrong, we like sex, but to a woman, affection leads to intimacy, which in turn will lead to sex. And for a man, intimacy is pretty simple. But we both want intimacy. How we get there is going to look different. And I think that's what can create a very close bond in our marriage.
So I know that as men and women, we are looking at affection differently, and that may be confusing to a lot of men. What does affection look like practically?
I feel, and this is for me, women, you know yourselves, but for me, I feel affection from Seth when he's present, when he's just next to me. When he's thoughtful, like opening the doors or scheduling a date, when he buys me flowers, I like flowers. When he texts me, I really love it when he texts me throughout the day to see how I'm doing. I like alone time. That's when I recharge. So when he takes the kids and lets me be home alone, to me that's showing affection. I really like it when he does some of my chores. Without me asking or anything, I come in and he's already done the laundry and folded it. So that's affection to me. And that means he really knows me, and he knows my favorite things, so he's done his work. That's affection. And then there's physical touch. And physical touch is so important to a woman, but it's very different from physical touch that a guy is probably thinking of. And it's holding and being close and touching and holding hands, but there can't even be a hint of any strings attached, just not. But it's so, right? I mean, really, but it's so important. And when that is met, that moves us towards that intimacy. And then finally, probably one of the most important things that shows me affection and moves us towards intimacy is anytime you lead our family spiritually, like when you pray with me personally or the family. So the spiritual connection really is a big one. And you're doing really, really good.
Thank you.
He's been doing his homework this week, asking me all the right questions. So I think when there's closeness, because of the affection, I'm going to feel that intimacy. And I'm going to feel cherished and valued, and I feel important to him, that he knows who I am. And they're not really difficult things to figure out, but, you know, every woman is going to be different. So find the right type of affection for your woman, find the need that's not being met, and become a student of your wife. Because for a woman, affection is going to lead to that intimacy that you're wanting.
I have learned over the years that when Dana's intimacy bucket is full, then my intimacy bucket is usually full later. But I think I think sometimes many of us guys are a little slow. I would say to you men, I would clarify it this way. Affection is the environment. Sex is the event. She needs the environment like we men need the event. Women need affection like men need sex. And there might be some women who would say, well, I feel like I have more desire than my husband does right now. Oftentimes that's because you want to feel closer to him. You want that closeness, and that's a way of feeling close. I want to summarize real quick here. Men, these are her top five needs. Family commitment and financial stability and honesty and openness and conversation and affection. And again, I don't give these to you to beat you up. I want to equip you. I want to arm you so that you can be her hero, so that you can fight that battle. I challenge you with this because I feel challenged when I look at this list as well. And I know that there's more than one area where I have plenty of room to grow in and live up to. So if you're feeling challenged as a man, embrace it. Run towards the battle. Don't walk away from it. Fight the battle. Here's the takeaway this week, and for the men, it's very simple, very similar to what we did last week. Men, I want you to ask your wife, which one of these five needs some of my attention? Which one of these specific five needs some of my attention? And I know that some of you might be thinking, well, that was similar to the homework last week. I've already asked her some questions, and she's already given me some responses. Well, marriage matters. This is not a one-and-done type of thing. So remember, she likes to have conversation, initiate conversation in this way. Keep moving towards better. Keep making progress. Keep working on things. Ladies, can I be a little blunt and honest with you at this point? The absolute worst thing that you could do is to throw this message in his face. If you shame him because of this, because he has failed you, if you shame him or try to make him feel less, you will fail every single time. Philippians 2, verses 3 and 4, Paul writes this, "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others." Ladies, in this case, to his interests. Try to receive that well. And so, ladies, your takeaway, I would put it this way. Women, be gracious and humbly cheer him on. You do that with your kids. Your kids draw a picture for you, and it's horrible. You put it on the refrigerator under a magnet, and you celebrate it and cheer them on. Sometimes you need to do a little bit of that with your man, okay? Cheer him along. Be gracious and understanding. Do not throw this in his face. Men, if it's been a while, and for the very first time you are starting to show effort to meet her needs, you need to recognize it's not going to change overnight. There may be some wounds that need healed. There may need to be some things that are dealt with first, but keep taking steps forward. I'll say it again, run towards the battle. Ladies, next week we're talking about his needs. So don't miss it. Be here, okay? You might feel just as challenged next week as he does right now. Men, if you feel hopeless, remember this idea. You won her once. You can win her over again, but it's going to take effort on your part. If either of you have ever thought, well, maybe the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. Maybe it would just be easier with somebody else. I will answer that thought for you very quickly. If the grass appears greener on the other side of the fence, then it's time to water your own lawn. Invest in your own marriage. Could you imagine if every marriage at Northeast did this? I mean, this is an amazing group that is here this morning. We had a smaller crowd in our 9 o'clock service, but could you imagine if all of us took this to heart and took this serious? The effect it would have in your marriage, in your family, maybe for generations to come, what that would look like, and even in this valley, in your workplace, what that would look like. And so men, let me end with this idea. If you walked out of here in a few moments and your wife were attacked and she is about to be harmed, would you not do everything within your power to protect her? Would you not lay your life on the line for her? I know you would because it's how you were created. That's what God put inside you, to protect your wife at all costs. So why wouldn't you lay everything down on the line for her in regards to your marriage? Why would you not lay down everything on the line for the woman that you said, for better, for worse? for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish till death do us part. Why wouldn't you do that? So as we close today, I have asked if Dana would pray for marriages today. We are going to be praying for you. And so just like we did last week, if you're a significant other, the person you're engaged to or dating or married to, if you would take their hand, I just want to encourage you to do that. And she is going to pray for marriage, that God would give us the strength to move forward with our marriages, to run towards the battlefield. So would you pray for us?